Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Cody Tapp, Logan Weber, and Drew Nixon with you. Alex Gold is off of work today, so he can wait with bated breath for the mailman to show up. The question is he on the front stoop? Like, is he peeking through the blinds of a window, or is he on the front stoop anxiously awaiting the arrival of a mailman? If you missed the news earlier this week.
What is bated breath?
That just means, you know, like holding
anxiously,
your breath.
Yeah, right? Anxiously.
A little piece of shrimp back in those molars.
You know, it feels like, based on the story, if you missed the story earlier this week, Alex was in a card pull. He got a one of one Caitlin Clark. It came via regular snail mail. And so he has been waiting anxiously for it to show up at his actual doorstep. He was originally scheduled to work today. He has decided to take the day off in order to wait for the package, which we all agreed. We would probably do the
100%.
Same. If somebody mailed you a $10,000 envelope of cash, which is essentially what they're sending him, could be more, right? Obviously, depending on it. You'd probably be waiting too, Logan, I imagine.
Yes, without question. I mean, I'm in it because it's a Caitlin Clark card. I mean, yeah, Alex and I have had several conversations. I'm an Iowa fan. I have several Caitlin Clark cards throughout my house. So via my
you
niece.
You want to pay
so
him for it? Maybe just not go to auction. Pony up the $20,000 and just call it a day.
Cody, I bought a house a month ago. I don't have $10,000 in scratch just laying around the house at the moment.
I don't know. At any point in my life, I've had $10,000 just laying around. That seems incredibly unlikely. You bought a house?
I did, yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, my wife and I bought a house in Grain Valley just over a month ago. We're starting to make it a home a little bit, right? We're starting to get comfortable. It's exciting. It's our first house ever, right? All we did was live in apartments before that. So
That's most people.
Like, yeah.
Of your generation? I mean, I hate to say it, man. I can't believe you bought one at all.
Borderline miracle. I'm fairly shocked by it myself, but you know, I'll give my wife 1,000% of the credit there. I was just there to help with the move-in.
You just sign the paperwork
exactly.
And be like, I'll put the couch inside.
Exactly. Her name's first on everything.
Yeah, what do I care? That goes back to the age-old conversation about whether or not, like, would you care if your wife made more? Like, hell no. She can make 20 times more than me. What the hell do I care?
Yeah.
I don't care who makes more money in this relationship. Just make money. We have to make money at some point.
Exactly.
We're going to get into a little bit. I see the news in the NFL that it appears they're going to go the way of the Connect jerseys, that of the NBA and Major League Baseball, something the NFL announced not that long ago. So we'll get into that here in just a little bit. I'll continue to remind you, tomorrow we will be in Springfield. Logan used to live in Springfield, so we can ask him
Correct.
For a little bit of advice on that. But Saturday, May 3rd, that's tomorrow, we'll be at Hammonds Field to watch Cags play baseball. If you pre-ordered the shirts that say Cags on them, they'll be available at Harbell's from 3:30 to 5. You still want to come? Plenty of time left. 96.5thefan.com. $10 tickets are up there on the website. You can all come join us. We are one day away. We are at like 215, 220 people scheduled to be down in Springfield as it sits right now. So a huge crowd going to watch Cags. Really looking forward to it. If somebody wants to go, just let us know. 96.5thefan.com for more tickets. And then, yeah, if you order those shirts, just come meet us at Harbell's. Have you been to Harbell's? It's
I
just
have.
Like, it's really close to Hammond's Field, it more is. Importantly.
It is. It's good food. I mean, it's a good spot to be at.
Wings apparently are okay?
Yes, the wings are fairly decent over there at Harbell's for sure. Yeah, I've been out there several times. We used to do some remotes out there during my time in Springfield.
Oh, so you, how big, we told them like, hey man, well, it'll just be like 50 people. We're not really sure. Obviously we have 220 people going, but we figured some people would filter in and out. Is it a big spot?
I mean, it's not.
The photos, I can't tell. Kind of looks small in the photos.
Yeah, it's not a massive spot. It's kind of on the corner there. I think, if I remember right, it's like right off of Park Central there in Springfield. So, I mean, it's not massive. If you've got 200 people showing up there and it's a normal Saturday at Harbell's in Springfield, it might be tough to find a chair, whether that's inside or outside. So, I think you should be okay. I mean, it's a Saturday afternoon, evening that you guys are going to be there.
3:30. I mean, the bar's not
okay,
full. Yeah,
3:30 on Saturday, I think you should be okay. If you're there at 8 or 9 o'clock on Saturday and you bring 200 people, good luck getting in the door.
We need the post. What I need from you is the post-game bar.
Okay.
We're going to be staying right there near Hammond's Field. So, like, you know, general area. Downtown's obviously not that far from there.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of where you should be. If you're planning on going out and going to a bar after the game, is you're likely going to end up downtown. It's a college town, right? And so all the bars are there downtown. I would not recommend, you know, sort of like the college club bars, sort of like Zane or Boogie or places like that, which I'm pretty sure those closed down a few months ago. There's a place I always like to go to downtown. It's called Ernie Biggs. We always called it the Piano Bar.
Yeah, I'm familiar. Where, yeah. The Ernie Biggs is a chain-ish? I don't
chain-ish,
know. There was one here for a while.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a piano bar. So you walk in and there's a full band, two separate or even three separate pianos, live music. You come up, make song recommendations or whatever. I always enjoyed going there. I'm a huge fan of live music, so I always enjoyed Ernie Biggs, but you know, to each their own. That's okay. What I would recommend.
It's too bad you couldn't come on the trip.
I know.
It would have been like visiting the old stomping grounds.
I know. I got a niece who begins her 9 or 10U soccer tournament tomorrow. Oh. So she's got games at 11 o'clock. If she wins, she plays at 5. So I'm busy watching soccer tomorrow.
Busy being an uncle.
That's
youth
correct.
Soccer? That's tough.
It's tough.
It's tough. I've got kids, so I can say that. Watching youth sports, it can be a bit of a grind. I'll tell you about something that happened to me here in just a little bit yesterday that was kind of surprising. But let's start with the Royals. Royals are on a hot streak. They've obviously been on this run for a while. They've won 9 of their last 10 games. They're heading to Baltimore, a team that's not played very well. And I asked this 2 weeks ago when we mostly got mocked on the show. And so I wanted to bring this conversation back up. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I'd ask, like, hey, if I had to ask you right now, do the Royals make the postseason? And I'd say, if you asked me right now, I'd still say yes. I know they're 5 or 6 or 7 games under 500, but I kind of refuse to believe that the offense will continue to stay this bad. It has, for the most part, stayed that bad. Although yesterday was a good sign. Vinny got 2 more RBI for the 2nd straight day. Bobby hit a homer. All the things you needed to see. That was one of the better offensive days they've had in a while. But this is why we refuse to panic going into it. There are things that are just fundamentally true about the Royals. Bobby Wood Jr. is still a star. He's got a 22-game hitting streak. And the Royals have probably, if not the best pitching staff in the American League, one of the 3 best pitching staffs in the American League. And that was highlighted again yesterday, where once again, just whoever steps up. Lugo was really good yesterday.
Yeah.
Day before, it was Noah Cameron, a guy who wasn't even in the bigs. And it doesn't matter who it is at this point. When I watch the Royals play, they have all the makings of a really, really, really good baseball team. The question for them will consistently be, will all the other hitters who haven't been hitting at some point hit? I know Salvi left the game injured yesterday, so we're waiting on more on that. But Vinny, Salvi, India, the same conversation that we've been having.
Yeah, this team, if I was to put a number on it, I'm probably 60-40 or even 65-35. They make the postseason at this point because of their pitching. Their pitching is so good top to bottom, whether it's the starters, whether it's the rotation. I mean, Daniel Lynch and John Schreiber and Estevez and Ursig, your pitching is going to keep you in almost every game this season. You are going to be within a couple of runs in 80% of your games this year, where if somebody just has a big night, that is a huge factor in this team's ability to stay competitive, right? I think that that's a huge, huge piece. Yes, Bobby's going to continue to be Bobby, but you're seeing other guys contribute. Mikel Garcia has been great this year. I don't think that's been talked about enough. Drew Waters coming up in the corresponding move with Melendez is... And so once you get, and I think that Vinny is getting a little bit more confident, Salvi, as long as he's able to stay healthy the whole year, I think that same thing plays in with Vinny. I agree. I think that this is a playoff team. I've never strayed from that. I don't know if this is a championship contending baseball team, although if
the pitching,
Yankees
I wouldn't
continue
rule
to
it
drop,
out.
Yeah, if the Yankees continue to drop like flies and the Orioles can't score a run or stop anybody, then yeah, they quickly become a team where if you look at, okay, the AL West is a lax division, the AL East can't stay healthy, whoever wins the AL Central automatically kind of becomes the proverbial favorite based on what's happening elsewhere across the league.
They're only right now, like really just for a while, it was just the Tigers and the Yankees. I think the Mariners are on a hot streak and the Guardians record, although the Guardians have a negative run differential worse than the Royals, 20 runs worse than the Royals. So, like, they once again, their record does not necessarily match their level of play. Every other team who has a better record than them has a positive run differential, and they're negative 24. So, like, I can't. Their expected win-loss, which is not, like, a stat that a lot of us follow on this, the Guardians should be the opposite of their record according to the expected win-loss. Mm. They would be expected to be 13-18 based on their run differential. The Royals would be expected to be flipped, too, but 15-17, so around that same range. The Tigers and the Yankees, to me, are the two teams who have clearly been the best teams in the American League at this point. Everything else is a massive wash. It's a wash. 2 weeks ago, when this team was seven games below 500, they were second to last, third to last in the American League. We talked about this going into the game yesterday. They were the worst run-scoring team in the bigs. But when I look at it, there's just too many markers of a good team. Pitching and Bobby Wood Jr. probably being the biggest keys of those things. Because those are going to be the things that stand out as being, okay, this makes sense for a team to be good at and also be good at baseball. The Orioles is a really interesting team that they've got this weekend because the Orioles were, they obviously beat them in the playoffs last year. But that was a contending team last year. They've been in or around the playoffs for a while. They stink. They stink this year. If the White Sox didn't exist, they've been the worst team in the American League probably at this point. Again, I have to say, if the White Sox do exist, they've been the second worst team in the American League this year. And I pointed this out before the series, when the Rays came into town, the Rays had won five straight games and the Royals just swept them. And then in the previous series, the team they went to had won five or six games and they won, two out of three or three out of four in that series too. So like they caught teams while they were hot and then held them down. So now you're catching a team that's not hot. Baltimore Orioles are the opposite of that. So, okay, take advantage of that. If you're catching them at a good time, catch them at a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a huge series for the beginning of the year, right? You're looking at a team that you competed against in the postseason a year ago and you took care of business. This was a hot team. I'll freely admit, the preseason pick I had for who won the American League was the Baltimore Orioles. It was shortly after the Gerrit Cole announcement that he was going to miss the year with Tommy John. I was rolling with the Baltimore Orioles, and they have been a dumpster fire. They can't score runs, and they can't prevent anybody from scoring runs. They've given up more runs than any team in the American League this year, and the third most in Major League Baseball. The only teams to give up more are the Miami Marlins and the historically bad Colorado Rockies. That's it. And so this is a team that had, the third or fourth highest odds to win the World Series this year coming into it, six games below 500. You've got a chance here. Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson are off to very, very slow starts to begin this year after everybody made the assumption they were going to take the next step forward, very similar to what Bobby's doing. You can't stop anybody. Burns goes down with the injury. Take advantage of a team that is down at the moment because I think the Orioles are too talented to be kept down forever. And so to have an opportunity like this, when you already played them once this year and you did some good things, to do it again in this series this weekend, you've got that ability over them early on in the year that's going to pay some dividends when you get into July, August, and September.
I guess part of my fear going into this road, so they played really well at home, and I'm like, all right. And then they were going back on the road, and I remember the last road trip, and I'm like, ugh. Oh, I hope that they don't just lose all this. I was a little bit worried. I was like, hope they don't lose all this momentum that they just got by being home and winning baseball games and now having to play on the road and, you know? And it's been the opposite. Obviously, they're having a tremendous, like, they could get, I don't think it will, but they get swept this weekend. It's still a good road trip.
Right.
Maybe not now that you know, like, the results of the first few games, but if you just looked at it in aggregate, it'd be hard-pressed to have me really complain going into Monday, depending on which setup they had. I mean, this is about as ideal as a start as it can be. We're going to talk more about it. I see some people mentioning, like, some of the sleeper players for the Royals. We'll talk about that more coming up here in just a little bit. As a reminder, Cody Tapp, Alex is out today. He's waiting for his Caitlin Clark card. Logan Weber's in for him. Drew's on the other side of the glass. And we have everybody, like, you know what? During Fan Club Friday today, Harold Kuntz is coming in. I think the friends over at Parisi are bringing in, like, coffee. Do you drink coffee?
I do.
Okay, so they're bringing in coffee-based drinks. So espresso martinis, Irish coffee, right, that kind of thing. Some Drew, you don't drink coffee. I've never seen you drink coffee.
Traditionally, no. So, I'm willing to try...
A coffee drink.
A coffee drink, yes. Okay. I can't guarantee that I'm going to like it, or I won't be done with it after...
A couple of sips?
A couple of sips, but yeah.
You know, sometimes you just kind of, like, grow up, start drinking. Like, an adult drink is coffee. Sometimes you're like, you know what? I can't just wake up in the morning.
You're basically calling me a child because I show up with soda in the morning and it just... In fairness, I'm a kid at heart. You know, I'm still in that... I'm not trying to live like a kid. I'm not trying to, like, relive glory days here, but I still act like a child sometimes.
Other than the songs or something I do for the show, what about my life is now at this point? I don't have any kid left. It's all slowly dying. I'm, like, married with kids. Like, you know, they're in, like, youth sports. I teach.
You can relive some of your childhood, though, along with your kids. Like, you can go out and throw a baseball or go ride a bike with Desmond. Like you've talked about riding a bike with Desmond.
Yeah,
before.
I've ridden bikes. But that's,
you're,
like,
you're
that
tapping back
like
in, you know?
Now, when you ride with an adult. Now, riding a bike like a kid would be with no helmet, you know? But if I'm riding with my kids, I got to put on a helmet to be like, we wear helmets.
Did
I wear
a
helmet as a kid?
Correct.
No. I used to ride my bike to this office when I first started working here. I didn't wear a helmet then, and I used to ride down 63rd Street. So I've never cared about my safety. But if I'm around my kid, I gotta, you know, I gotta feign.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not kidding. This is actually really great timing. Yesterday, it was wild. Yesterday, I was driving into my daughter's dance studio. And so I'm pulling left into a parking lot. And as I'm pulling in, I watched an old white-haired woman run right into someone riding a bike. They were, like, on an e-bike, and she trucked her down. And so I was like, oh, my God, she just hit that person with her car. And so I was like, well, that can't be good. And my daughter's like, what happened? I'm like, just give me a second. I got to figure out. Let me get you in the parking lot in the dance studio. So I get her in. Like, it takes maybe 3 minutes. I just get her backpack. I'm like, get inside. I got to go check to make sure that this woman is okay. She just got hit by a car. Old lady coming out of the car. And I'm like, oh, whoopsie. Right? I mean, she seemed very casual about it. 3 minutes go by. By the time I get down there to check on the woman, the person who had been hit still there. And I'm like, are you okay? She's like, my seat won't work. And so I helped her fix her bike seat. And, like, we went through these little things. And I'm like, okay, did you, like, the woman who had hit her was already gone. 3 minutes? She didn't hit and run. She hit her, was like, I guess you're cool, and then dipped.
Yo,
if I hit someone
crazy
with my car, it's going to take a lot longer than 3 minutes to leave. That's a crazy short time, right?
Yes.
To leave. Hit someone with your car.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it was a bumper to bumper accident. Like, I've been there before. Like, I was driving my car one day. My dad's in the passenger seat. I'm at a stop sign, and car behind me, younger girl, and she hits me with her car. Right, we're both at the stop sign. She just, like, looked up and thought I went and went. She was obviously on her phone, and so we got out of the car. I look at my bumper. It's fine. I look at her bumper. It's fine. There was no trading paint, no anything. And it was sort of like, do we really want to do this right now?
Yeah, that's okay.
Everything's fine. You hit a pedestrian, basically. You hit a person who had no outside protection
whatsoever.
She had a
scrape on her face.
Other than, like, a bicycle
helmet.
Her
bike was all messed up.
What in the
world
is going on?
Like, I had to refix her seat. And I asked, hey, did you get enough information from this woman? And she was like, yeah. I was like, are you sure? Like, she hit you with her car. There's, like, a car accident. You can, like, she's like, I just bought this bike. And I'm like, you could get a new bike from this woman. Like,
how about we trade some insurance information, like, here a little bit?
Like,
I don't know.
I gave her my phone number. I'm like, if for some reason this ends up in court, you're probably going to want a witness. And I definitely watched that lady hit you with her car. So I guess here's my number. I will say, I told someone, I was like, you know, in these situations, I usually leave my number. And somebody's response, my friend was like, wait, how often does this happen? And there were two other incidents I could think of. Not when I watched someone get hit as a pedestrian, but there's two other times I had to leave my phone number. One time I watched a woman run into a fire truck, a backing up fire truck into a fire station. And I had to leave my number for like the fire chief there at the building. I eventually got subpoenaed to court for that one.
Nice.
So I kind of regretted leaving my number, even though I witnessed the accident. And the other time was like I watched a drunk driver smash into a lady. And then I went down there to make sure that they were okay. I didn't know they were drunk at the time. To make sure they were okay. And then it's like split out of their car, just like empty booze bottles. I'm like, well,
just took off on foot.
Yeah. Just took off on foot.
Nice.
I was like, well, here's my phone number to the person who we stood by waiting for like the ambulance to show. I was like, here's my number, I guess, in case you need it. Because so I don't, what am I supposed to do? Are we not supposed to leave our number in case somebody needs like a witness? I don't want someone getting screwed by their insurance company.
I mean, you're like the ultimate good Samaritan, Cody. I applaud you for that. I personally have
really
not
wanted to make sure that person wasn't hurt. She got hit pretty hard by that car.
The only time I ever had to leave my phone number was when I was involved in a car accident that was 1000% my fault. So I do not have any experience on your side.
Oh, man. I guess I'm just near accidents.
I haven't. So I witnessed a really, really bad accident before, actually. As far as I know, everybody was okay. I never left my number because it was kind of chaotic. I wasn't thinking about it.
If it's insurances and all that stuff, it's a little bit different, right? Mine is just like, do you need a witness for this? Clear it.
It was a drunk driver at a very popular intersection in Indianapolis later at night, probably 8 o'clock, 8:30. I guess not later. It's just the evening. We're all at a stoplight, and it's a four-way lane. It's a very popular highway or a road. Four lanes, both sides, two lanes coming across. Yeah. We get the green light, and we're all starting to go. I'm on the far right side lane. This person who was on the far left side lane took off a little bit faster in a Cadillac. Drunk driver runs the red light, had to be going at least 50, clips the Escalade. The Escalade starts barrel rolling. Fall and eventually lands on the side, tips over. The lady, I don't know if she wasn't wearing a seatbelt. There is a sunroof. She was partially hanging out of the sunroof.
Oh my God.
Dead serious. It was a vicious accident. Didn't go in. I was stuck. We were all stuck there for like 45 minutes to an hour. Pulled over. I made sure I got out. Me and somebody else like looked at each other like, holy crap, did you just see what I saw? Got out of the car, ran up to the Escalade to make sure the lady was okay. She was breathing and everything, thankfully.
Ugh.
But that was a vicious accident that really is the only one that I've ever witnessed before. But that was a long time ago. That was when I was in college.
Either way, very wild.
Yes.
We can talk more about that later on in the show for sure. Coming up here in about 10 minutes, Jake Eisenberg, the play-by-play voice of the Royals, he'll join us to talk about their streak. Can I ask, it's only been 3 games now since the song, but the last 2 games, are we good? We think Vinny's better? Problem solved, Drew? Are we back on... For Logan doesn't know.
Are you trying to do what Dusty did yesterday?
I'm not trying to take credit. I'm just asking if we're good. Not yet. I told you I'm 14 days.
Okay.
I am pointing out there does seem to be an early correlation between some performance that's going better for Vinny and the timing of said song. But what I'm telling you here is Vinny looks way more comfortable at the plate. And while it took a month, I think we're getting ready to for the next couple of weeks. See the Vinny that we're accustomed to. 2 RBI in each of the last 2 days. This is a whole other thing about why he was never going to get sent down. Or people didn't need to worry about, like, what are they going to do with Vinny for a while? Should they move him down in the order? He's an RBI guy. He's always been an RBI guy for this team. He's consistently done that. He's looking more comfortable again a little bit of the plate. Seeing a home run and a double the last 2 days means the power is coming back a little bit. I think we're getting ready to see normal Vinny for the month of May.
Yeah, the stat that I look at that I'm most confident in Vinny sort of figuring it out is the number of strikeouts. I mean, he's only struck out 5 times in the Royals' last 7 games. That was something that at the beginning of the year,
he's always a good strikeout guy.
Yeah, he was always a good strikeout guy. And the fact that the strikeout numbers indicate to you that he's seeing the ball better. Not only is he making contact, even when he's getting out, he's not doing it by having to walk back to the dugout after picking up a 3rd strike. So that is kind of what gives me confidence. I'm always going to be a little bit worried about Vinny, but not because of his on-field performance. I think that will always straighten itself out. The question is always, can you get Vinny for 162? Can he stay healthy throughout the entire course of a season? If he can do that, I am not worried about Vinny being able to figure it out this year and provide runs for this Royals team.
It's so crazy how quickly like an injury thing can do it, because like Vinny's injury last year had nothing to do with the reason he was missing baseball before this.
Yeah.
It was just like, Ursig made a bad throw, and then he came into the line, and then his thumb got broken, And it had nothing to do with like him keeping his body healthy or those things. But I do, I am like a firm believer in that some people are just magnets for it.
Mm-hmm. Just fluke like injuries. Not,
yeah, even fluke injuries. Because like, I think Hollywood Brown's a perfect example of this. I wouldn't be saying that about Vinny if it's like, so Hollywood, a lot of the defense is like, well, this isn't like the reasons Hollywood's missed time before. Freak injury. I'm like, man, he just gets hurt. I don't know how. He just gets hurt. So for Vinny's sake, there is a part of me that's just like, even though last year is a complete freak, he was playing every single day. He was playing every single day for like 110 games.
Yeah, he was top three in the American League in RBIs.
Yeah, he was a 100 RBI guy, all this stuff. It's working, no questions about it. And then freak injury, and you're like, how? How? Now, his ability and willingness to play through injury and come back from injury makes me think that just as long as it's not something he can't play through, like he did early, because remember he had the pulled the hamstring like,
yeah,
I don't know, 2 days before opening day this year. Hasn't missed any time as a result of it. I think they kept him out of like one additional game early, and they had him DH one additional time there the first few weeks a little bit early. But that's the whole point about the way these American League teams handle the DH. When India was coming back from the injury, you DH him a little bit. Salvador Perez, who left the game early yesterday, I imagine if he doesn't have to head to the IL, and I don't think there's been an update yet today, depending on where his injury is, he says they'll know more status today, depending on if he doesn't miss, like if he doesn't have an IL stint, my guess is he'll be DHing mm-hmm. for a little while, and Vinny will need to play first, and Fermin will catch, and that's how they'll do it for a little bit. And like with Salvi, I don't know, in a weird way, it's, I don't really panic with Salvi. He has these little things flare up. He misses like half. He gets a half start, which is the DH, and then he just plays.
Yeah.
Anybody ever worry about Salvi not coming back on the field? Like maybe a 10-day IL stint, but like, I mean, he's never missing a lot of time.
I think it entirely stems from the fact that he's a catcher, and catchers always deal with these small little injuries throughout the course of a year. It's, catchers are typically a much bigger body than a lot of guys you'll see. They don't have the same body type as somebody who's in the outfield or somebody who's playing, you know, the middle infield or even a third or a first baseman. And you put a lot of wear and tear on your body by catching every day. And yeah, those things are going to happen, but it's never been a catastrophic injury. It's never been, you know, a hardcore knee injury or a dislocation of anything. He's always been able to bounce back, and until we see him have a big time injury, I'm never going to be worried that we're going to see Salvi miss extended time.
No, I don't know. We'll see. There's supposed to be an update later today, so I don't want to just tell you like everything's fine with Salvi. We don't know yet. We can ask our next guest, Jake Eisenberg. He's the play-by-play voice of the Royals. He's watched them win 9 of their last 10. What does he think about where the team is? We'll talk about that next.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Next. Back in here on Cody and Gold, Cody Tapp, Logan Weber in for Alex today, Drew Nixon on the other side of the glass. In a couple of minutes, we'll have Jake Eisenberg, the Royals play-by-play voice, join us. Just needs a couple more minutes, and we'll head out to Baltimore, where he'll join us there on the East Coast. But let's talk a little Chiefs here for just a second, and then we can back into the Royals with him. Breshard Smith was a player that I admittedly, like, because like my trouble always with this stuff is like, if the hype train gets out of control, I'm like, okay, let's temper some expectations of what a seventh-round pick is expected to do in an offense where he's clearly the third running back, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want it to be like a runaway freight train of expectations where we can't contain what level of players time to be. I went back and I was listening to more on Ryan Nutt, who's the Royals player personnel vice president or director of player personnel. He's the number two guy behind Brett Veach, if you just want to know the pecking order. And he was talking a little bit about Rashard Smith and how he fits in. And I'm going to give him a little bit of credit for, like, if this is a role they see it in, I could see why it works. But first, I'm going to tell him I would not make this comp if I were him. Ryan Nutt was talking about the role that they could put him in. And he was saying, hey, you know, we know his receiver ability, which obviously he was a wide receiver for the first 3 years in college in Miami. We like him in the backfield. Like, you know how it is. The Chiefs love a good hybrid, gadgety, use him everywhere, use him in kick returns, use him on third downs, surprise teams role. But the player he specifically said that they had in mind for him is the way that they wanted to use Kadarius Toney.
Mm.
And I know that, like, some part of, like, the Chiefs are trying to convince us that the story on Kadarius Toney is not. It's just injuries and mental miscues. The talent's there in the world. Are you sure? Like, I've seen a lot of incredibly talented players who were knuckleheads who still had success in the league. Kadarius never had success in the league doing anything. He might run fast, but that doesn't mean talent.
Yeah.
Lots of people in this world run fast. That is the last player I would start bringing up as a comp. And yet, the role they claim they wanted for Kadarius Toney, and I think actually works for Rashard Smith. If they're going to use some of that receiving ability right away, that's the only way for him to get time early, in my opinion. Otherwise, between Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, he might be looking at 2 touches a game, 3 touches a game in the early stretch, unless there's some injury that I'm not seeing.
Yeah, I agree. I think you put it very, very good there, very well. I think player to player, please God, no. Role to role, it makes a lot of sense. And yeah, what intrigues me about it,
I don't want to hear Kadarius Toney, say somebody right. else.
What intrigues me about it is Kadarius Toney or even Mecole Hardman to some extent, because I think he was used in sort of that same gadgety yeah. role in some respect as well. It was a wide receiver that you were trying to get to do some running back like things with jet sweeps and other, you know, extensions of the run game. I like it from the opposite angle here, where you've got a guy who, yes, played wide receiver, but is coming into the league as a running back out of his senior year at SMU, a guy who you know can run and catch the football, using him in that role rather than what you had to do with Kadarius or Mecole, where you were like, hey, we got to teach them how to be running backs here a little bit. You don't have to do that with Rashard Smith. But I agree with you completely at the start of your comment there. He's a 7th round pick for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not sitting here like, oh, you know, he has a similar height and weight and body type and he runs a similar 40. And I've heard it. I don't know if you've heard it. I've heard people be like, oh, he reminds me of Jamal Charles. Whoa. It pumped the brakes ever so slightly. He's a 7th round pick for a reason. Jamal Charles was probably a mid to late 2nd rounder who somehow fell to the Chiefs in the 3rd.
It's more likely he's cut by August 20th than he's Jamal
yes.
Charles.
Yes.
Like, that is statistically far, 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 far more likely.
I feel like a good comp.
I think he'll be on the team, but, like, I mean,
if I were to compare him to somebody, I think it'd be Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard played at Memphis, smaller school, of course, SMU, smaller school, at the time that Rashard really played. There, of course, they moved to the Big 12. But anyways, Tony Pollard is that running back who also was a really good receiver, was that in college, was a return specialist in college, did a little bit of everything with the Cowboys. Of course, he was better when he was second fiddle, technically, to Zeke Elliott when he was in Dallas. I wonder if Rashard Smith can be similar to that. He can be the second to Pacheco or whatever the role is there, but he's the guy that you can utilize in the receiving side. You can use him as a returner. You can use him, of course, as a runner. I think having him as with the background of wide receiver really helps, I think, in terms of the way that Andy can utilize him, whether it be even in the slot or it'd be out of the backfield. There's a lot of creativity that could potentially come from them adding a guy like Rashard Smith.
A lot. It's like, so if I asked you, I'll give you 2 guys. And remember that Isaiah Pacheco missed time. That's part of the reason at least one of these guys' numbers is a little bit higher. All right, I'll give you the lower one first. Does Rashard Smith have over under 209.5 yards from scrimmage? That is Carson Steele's number from last year. Undrafted free agent, so a similar range is what Rashard Smith is. 7th to undrafted free agent, seeing how he was one of the bigger named undrafted free agents, it's probably about the same. 209.5? I'd probably take the over. I wouldn't do it with any kind of confidence, but I would take the over. Nobody would take over 414.5, right? That's Samaje Perine's?
No.
Number from last year. And the only reason Samaje's was that high, I think, is because the injury to Pacheco.
Yeah, the injury to Pacheco.
Otherwise, I wouldn't put it even that high.
Yeah, the Carson Steele number is interesting. I'm curious what happens with Elijah Mitchell. Because if Elijah Mitchell can stay healthy, he and Breshard Smith are competing for the same role, right? They're both sort of looking towards that Jerick McKinnon type, you know, second, third back, you know, the third down guy. I'm curious to see how that fits. If Elijah Mitchell is healthy, then I'm taking the under on everything, and Breshard Smith's probably going to be on the practice squad this year. So
we'll get back to a little Chiefs football here coming up in a little bit, but let's head out to Baltimore, where our guy Jake Eisenberg, the play-by-play voice of the Royals, is talking some, or, you know, is excited to talk some Royals baseball with us. Drew, I am going to need you to pick up the phone. This thing still stinks. My phone doesn't work, Jake. I can't pick up my own phone ever in this studio, I swear.
That seems like a you problem.
Is it user error? I'm telling you, this phone hasn't worked from day one. They changed us to these, like, internet-based phones, and I sound like the oldest person on the planet right now, Jake, but I'm telling you, it doesn't work.
Look, I have the utmost faith that you'll figure it out, though, Cody. If anyone can do it, it's you.
I want to talk to you a little bit about where the team is right now, and then we can talk about where some of the guys are as far as big contributors or small contributors and that. But winning 9 of 10, this goes back to the same thing we're talking about. They're not doing it with some offensive explosion. I know yesterday they had a great day offensively between Bobby Wood Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino. But the fact that they've been able to win while still carrying this offensive flaw to me is that I think it's one of the signs of a really good baseball team.
Well, I mean, think about what did we talk about, you know, about a week ago now? You know, what was more likely to continue, the really, really good pitching or the kind of fluctuating offense that, you know, might struggle to score runs at certain times? And the answer is still that pitching rarely slumps in the same way that offense does. And I think what you've seen is you've seen a team that is certainly buoyed by pitching, but it's also a team that's built around pitching. It's built around Reagan's, Lugo, Waka, Bubich, Lorenzen, and Noah Cameron throwing 6 1/3 no-hit innings before, you know, giving up one in the seventh. And you've seen a really, really good bullpen. You know, Lucas Erceg is, I think, second in the majors in holds, and Carlos Estevez has 8 saves. And, you know, when the offense can provide you with just enough, guess what? Like, you don't get extra points or extra wins for winning by 5 or winning by 10. You just need to score one more run than the other team. And sometimes the best offense is also run prevention on the other side.
When you look at what the Royals are doing offensively, do you see good signs out of Vinny Pasquantino? I'm asking for a friend. I mean, like, less strikeouts. He's hitting the ball harder. We've seen a double and a home run the last 2 days. Feels like maybe he's rounding into form.
Yeah, I think these are really, really good signs. And there's also been a couple of balls that he's stung and then wound up as some hard hit outs. He got robbed of a couple in Tampa, if memory serves. And so, you're seeing a little bit more consistency when it comes to the plate appearances and the at-bats and then the batted ball data. And, of course, the results. And I love what Vinny said the other day. He said this to Steve Stewart post-game that, you know, this is a results-focused game, but it is process-based. You know, and like we care about the results and the results matter, but ultimately it's the process that gets you where you want to go over the course of 162. That's the larger point that he was trying to make. And so, you know, reading between the lines of what Vinny was saying, like, he feels like the process has been good, especially over the last week or so, especially at the plate. Like, the plate appearances have been good, and that good process ultimately will lead to good results. You know, think about what we were talking about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago now, about Salvador Perez and how his expected numbers were among the best in the league, and he was just having horrible batted ball bad luck. Well, look what's happened over the last week. He's hitting the ball just as hard, just as consistently, but now it's starting to fall in the gaps and find spaces, and he has more doubles than, I don't know, anybody else in the last week or so.
So I want to ask you, Jake, one guy that I feel like isn't being talked about quite enough offensively for this Royals team to start the year is Mikel Garcia. He's hitting 290 plus. He's got over a 350 OBP. Is this something that we should expect from him? Because I know he got off to a great start last year, and then things kind of tapered off with him in the leadoff role, and he got some grief for it. What is the difference in Mikel Garcia from last year to this year in his approach at the dish?
So the big difference is that he's changed his, I guess, his stride a little bit. He's gone from what you would consider a leg kick to more of a toe tap. So there's a little bit less movement It's a little bit more balanced and his timing is better. And because of that, he said that he's not crashing to the ball as much as he was last year. That's a term that you'll hear a lot, especially with the guys with a leg kick. They get that foot down and then they attack the ball. They crash to the ball. And sometimes that can get you in trouble if your timing's off. But for Mikel, since he's gone to the toe tap, he's a little bit more balanced now. He's not crashing the ball, and that keeps him more consistent, more on time, and he's just hitting missiles all over the place. And we've seen him not just hit to the opposite field like we saw when he was going really well last year, but now he's starting to pull the ball with authority, and that's when you can really do some damage. As far as expectations go, I think that's kind of a nebulous concept. You can expect whatever you want to expect. Ultimately, you know, what you're getting is going to be what you're getting. And what Mikel Garcia has proven is that he is capable of stretches like this over the course of a season. Every hitter is going to have, you know, peaks and valleys. And what we see from the best hitters is the ones that really limit those valleys and sustain those peaks. Can Mikel Garcia be one of those? Of course he can. I mean, he's only 25 years old. I think we sometimes talk about Mikel in this really interesting way where, you know, he's the same age as Bobby, but they also had very different upbringings where, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. was the superstar and the prospect that was promised by the time he was 15 years old. Mikel Garcia signed when he was 17 years old, came to a new country. He's had a very different developmental life than your, you know, classic number one prospect, you know, built around the American game and the American system of prospecting. So when we look at Mikel Garcia, I think sometimes we forget that he's only 25 and still getting bigger and still getting stronger and still very much kind of learning at the fly the same way that Bobby is. Bobby is just a supernatural talent and not everybody's like that.
I know it affects people differently, but with Mikel, and you can agree or not, but like with Mikel, it feels like confidence is even more important for him. Like when he's just like feeling good, he plays like, and I know that affects everyone, Jake, but like, I feel like with him, it is a like vital part of it.
Yeah. You can see it with him too. Like he wears it on his sleeve, I think in a really fun way. You know, when he gets that big hit or has that big home run or makes that big play, you can see the emotion pour out of him, which I love. And we saw it during the postseason last year. He rose to the moment in the postseason last year. Lest we forget, Mikel Garcia and Michael Massey were the two best hitters on this team during the postseason last year. They tied for the team lead in hits. Mikel Garcia was instrumental in the wild card wins, both with hits and stolen bases. So when the moment gets bright, Mikel Garcia usually shines.
There are only two guys in the bullpen, I would say, who had struggled at any point this year. Sam Long, who's currently on the IL, and Chris Stratton outside of that. Are we seeing some guys like John Schreiber, who did not have he didn't have a very good year last year. He's fine, I guess. But when you look at some of this, are we seeing some of those guys play better now that they are in the correct role, I guess is how I would put it? Estevez, Urseg, Zerpa, like it's a little while before we get to you. And Schreiber's still pitching some like seventh, eighth inning stuff, but now that they don't have to pitch the eighth or the highest leverage, like I feel like I'm seeing more out of him.
That's an interesting point. I'll say this with Schreiber specifically, like the beginning of last season, remember that dude gave up like one run over the course of the first month of the year. Then he hit a really rough patch in the middle of the season, had a knee injury, came back, and like the rest of the bullpen, he was nails down the stretch. And that is kind of the life of a reliever. You're going to have a couple of appearances here or there where you're just going to give up four runs. You're going to give up that big home run. It's going to spike your ERA. And you're going to look back at the season and say, man, I had a 440 ERA. Didn't really pitch like that for most of the year, which is why ERA can be a little misleading for relievers.
Yeah.
To your point though, I think if you want to zoom out a little bit, like the idea of a reliever having success is also somewhat dependent in some ways, not only on that reliever having the stuff and knowing how to get the guys out that he's tasked with getting out, but also the coaching staff putting those relievers in positions to succeed. You know, let's say that you have a presentation at work or something in everyday life and you're kind of thrown into the fire with it without a moment's notice. Well, guess what? You've just been put in a position to fail. And if you succeed, that's amazing. And if you fail, like that really hurts. But also, like, you know that you weren't put in a position to succeed. And I'm not saying that these guys have been put in positions to fail before, but I do think that with all the matchups that Q and Brian Sweeney, Zach Bowe, and Mitch Stetter, the way that they kind of view optioning, you know, working a bullpen, like, you see guys pitching in a lot more situations to succeed rather than situations where they need to kind of pull one out of the fire. And I think that's been an interesting part this year.
Well, it's obviously working right now, and it worked to the tune of a sweep of the Rays on the road over the last 3 days. How big was that for this Royals team that coming into this series against Tampa had really struggled on the road? They were 3-10 coming into this three games against the Rays and finishing now at 6-10.
Yeah, I mean, I think any win is huge. Any series win is huge. Any sweep is huge, whether it's at home or on the road. I mean, I'm going to parrot Matt Cotrera a little bit, but, you know, let me ask you this. Logan, do you remember what the Royals' road record was last year?
Oh, man, couldn't tell you.
That's my point. Does it matter? You know, the Royals were 86 and 76 last year. Does it matter how many of those wins came at home and how many were on the road? Ultimately, it really doesn't. You want to be consistent everywhere you play, but again, you don't get bonus points for having a certain road record or a certain home record. So yeah, every win is huge, and it feels good when you win at home. It feels good when you can, you know, take one at somebody else's place. But when all said and done and you're looking up in October and you've either won the Central or you've clinched a wild card spot or you're trying to get to the ALCS or the World Series, no one's looking back and saying, oh, wow, this team was really good or really bad on the road this year. It doesn't matter ultimately, right?
No, it doesn't. I mean, in the end, we care about the win. Sometimes we look at it as like you're built for your own ballpark. But in this case, the Royals got a bad first road trip, but now a good second road trip already underway with three more against Baltimore. Jake, I have two more important things to get to before we get out of here. First is you're a baseball guy. You've been a baseball guy your whole life. I got buried because I said I don't believe in jinxes. He has six no-hit innings when Noah Kammer's in the middle of it. Pro or anti bringing up a no-hitter?
Oh, I was talking about it in the fifth inning.
Okay. Okay, so you
we were talking about it in the fourth inning.
We can't jinx it. You agree with me there?
No. No, there is no such thing as a broadcaster jinx. There is such thing as a broadcaster coincidence. I was joking with Seth Lugo last week. I was on the call on the TV side, and I was talking about how Isak Paredes hits the ball to the pull side, you know, almost all the time. And then what does he do in the next pitch? He shoots an opposite field double. And it was kind of like, oh, of course, you know, I'm talking about pull side hitting and he goes oppo. Like, that's an example of broadcaster coincidence. But is the thing that I said the thing that caused the thing that happened? Absolutely not. And you know what? At the end of the day, this is my core belief when it comes to the whole broadcaster jinx thing. My job as a broadcaster, especially on the radio, when we are painting the word picture, is to tell people what is happening. And if Noah Kammer is throwing a no-hitter, when you're hopping in the car, driving to wherever you're going, and you're flipping on the game, you ought to know that there's a no-hitter that's happening that you're listening to, right?
Yes.
And that's my job to tell you that. And look, if I had control over what was happening down in the field, the Royals would throw a perfect game and hit 27 home runs every single night, right?
Yes.
So,
100% agree. Okay, so we're good there. Second, Alex is out today. He wasn't intentionally trying to duck you. Did you hear Alex missed? And I'm curious now if you would have done the same. Alex got a card in a card break. It is a Caitlin.
I saw that. Yeah.
It's a Caitlin Clark, one of one. He is waiting desperately on the United States Postal Service to deliver it to his house, to which it appears he's already having trouble with today. Would you have taken off work to wait for that card to show up?
So wait, he's sitting at his house waiting for the card to show up?
Yep.
I'm guessing he has like a tracking number or something.
He's got some tracking just through like the postal service thing. And he said, he's upset. He was tracking it. It said it was out for delivery. Now he's saying maybe it's not. He's trying to figure it all out, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know what? I mean, I think if I had the ability to take off work and wait for something that was, you know, that exciting or that prized or that, I don't know how valuable it is, but yeah, I guess I'd probably consider doing that if I had the ability to.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Make sure you're good.
I don't know.
I can't blame him.
I don't know that I can. I can't blame him for that. Especially. Look, I mean, you know, maybe because it's a Friday and Saturday, and then there's no mail on Sunday. You want to make sure you get it before the weekend, or you know, in case, you know, I don't know where he lives, or you know, if there's a porch pirate situation going on. But yeah, I guess
can't risk it.
I guess I'd want to. I get it.
I was once late for the show for writing a blimp, Jake. I didn't feel like I was in the right place to criticize. So.
Yeah, I guess, you gotta look in the mirror first before you're going to judge somebody else.
Glass houses. Have fun in Baltimore, Jake. We're looking forward to talking to you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Take care.
That's Jake Eisenberg. He's a Royals play-by-play man and voice of the Royals. I meant that thing about Schreiber. John Schreiber has been long the ire, as a number of Royals bullpen guys were last year. But our whole thing on the Royals bullpen last year was not that they didn't have some capable arms. It's that they had everybody in the wrong roles.
Yeah.
Like, James McArthur had to close because they didn't have someone to close. And then when they brought in Hunter Harvey, he got hurt. Well, now they have the two guys to close. That's Urseg and Estevez. They get 8-9. Well, then now Schreiber gets to kick in there in the sixth or the seventh. Zerpa gets to do the sixth or the seventh. Two guys have really failed in the bullpen so far this year. Chris Stratton, who I don't think is long for this world. I think once Hunter Harvey comes back, that's probably the end of his road here in Kansas City. And Sam Long, who is now on the IL. The worst ERA outside of those two guys in the bullpen right now is Angel Zerpa with 3.97. Sub 2.5 for Estevez, sub 1.3 for Lynch. Urseg is sub 1. Schreiber has an ERA right near 2. And then all the other guys who have randomly pitched, Sisk or Cruz or have all pitched scoreless.
Yeah.
So like the bullpen by all accounts has been, I think, getting guys in the right roles, getting to let them face the right hitters. Like Schreiber's pitching in the 7th against 7-8-9. Okay, great. That's your sweet spot.
Exactly.
We got it. Cool. No problem. We don't run into problems here.
Nobody was in a set role last year. And I think some of that was because they didn't have enough arms last year, right? This team is bullpen rich this year compared to where they were pre-trade deadline a year ago, right? When they brought in Urseg, things were able to shift there a little bit. But again, with the injury to Hunter Harvey, now this team, with the addition of Estevez, with how good Schreiber's been, with Daniel Lynch going from a guy that was competing for that fifth spot in the rotation to absolutely nails with a 1.26 ERA in the bullpen, you have so many guys that you can throw out, and you don't have to throw them out all the time. I mean, the guys were getting overworked in a lot of respects last year. Now you have all this ample spot and opportunity to just throw whoever you want out in a certain role. Lefties against righties, righties against lefties. Okay, this guy pitched yesterday. Let's pitch somebody else today. You didn't have as much of an opportunity to do that a year ago. Now you've got it in spades. A
little bit of news out of the NBA. Shams reporting that Greg Popovich will no longer be the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs.
Whoa!
He's transitioning full-time to team president, according to ESPN. Obviously, Popovich is the Hall of Famer, all-time winningest coach. 5 different championships with the Spurs across the board. He's one of the all-time great NBA coaches. But after healthcare last year, he's not going back to coaching. That's
it. Not much of a surprise.
So he's going to go to team president instead and no longer going to be the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. That is still huge news.
Oh, it's massive.
That's an all-time great no longer coaching in the NBA.
Man, I am going to be fascinated to see who ends up filling those shoes. Who's going to be the next head coach of the San Antonio Spurs?
10 years ago, everybody in town would have been talking about Bill Self taking the job. That was the whole thing. He's friends with their owner.
Actually going to grow legs again?
No. Come on. We're not doing the Bill Self to the Spurs things now, are we? I mean, come on. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it made sense, Drew. Like, there's a time in which he's young enough, and also, like, it kind of tracks. You know, why would Bill, and this is the other part about the NBA, why would you take that job now in your career? You get to just be the Kansas basketball head coach for the rest of your life, go down an all-time legend, and do, like, you're going to go to the NBA now, and then what? In the NBA, you can get run out in 2 years.
You do get to coach Wemby.
You do get to coach. I will say, coaching Wemby, do you? Or is deep vein thrombosis going to hold him back? Doesn't he have, like, the blood clot issue?
Yeah.
That's derailed. Superstar careers.
I'm intrigued to see what they do with Mitch Johnson, who's the guy that's been interim. He's been the interim there. I promote him. If I was the Spurs, because I would do that.
The guy hiring is Greg Popovich. He's the team president, probably.
It would make sense that his lead assistant, the assistant who is taking over for him, would be the guy. But now that you mentioned the whole blood clot thing, I was going to say you should have Wemby and Stephon Castle be a part of the decision making, because those are the two guys that are like your cornerstones. But because it's such a player driven league, but
in the NBA, you'll ask Wemby, you'll ask Fox, you'll ask some of the guys who are really good players for you, and you'll find out whether or not this is a guy they really love playing for.
Yeah,
but Wimby's not going to want to, you know, like, or sorry, Popovich isn't going to fire his friend just because left the job.
Yeah,
if he's moving on to team president role, that means he's making decisions or helping make decisions on what they're going to do from a head coaching standpoint. And if he's helping make decisions, it's got
to
be him.
Yeah, he was probably a huge part in making Mitch Johnson the interim to begin with.
Yeah.
My question is this a decision from Pop that just happened, or has he known about this for a while?
I'm guessing it was a medical thing. He tried to coach for a chunk this year.
For sure. If so, I lean towards Mitch Johnson becoming the guy. He's been an assistant for him for 5 years before this season even started, and becoming the interim. That would be where my money sits.
Spurs
is Mitch
culture,
Johnson is the head coach.
The whole culture thing around them.
It just fits them to a T. It's to just hire from within, for sure.
Man, 5 championships and the all-time winningest coach. No big deal.
He's one of the best coaches in pro sports, period. Now, you know, not just the NBA.
No, he's pretty much like, Yeah, I mean, if you limit it to the NBA, it's just like Phil Jackson,
yeah. Pat Riley, you know, those guys are up at the top.
Certainly of our era. Yeah, yeah, like we go further back. But like of my era, it's like Popovich and, yeah, Popovich, Riley, and Phil Jackson are probably the ones I think of the most. And then at some point, like Steve Kerr started to enter those conversations as he started winning with the Warriors. But I don't know, the NBA's like transitioned a lot of time since then, so it's always kind of hard to track. But
just don't make it Doc Rivers.
Greg Popovich plans to retire after 29 years in the NBA. Yeah, so they can lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Why not? Doc Rivers is trying to complete something that's never been. He's just trying to be the head coach for every organization in the NBA, and he's honestly making headway.
The
NFL does a good job of this, too, but I think it's better. The NBA does a ridiculously good job of recycling coaches who just don't have any business. Like Mike Budenholzer being the coach of the Suns. Didn't work out. Shouldn't be a head coach for a while.
It'll be a head coach for the Kings in a couple of years.
He won a title.
Yeah.
Right? It's the only reason Doc's still coaching is because he won a title 20 years ago with KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen.
In fairness, the only reason he wasn't the coach anymore is because Giannis didn't like him.
Yeah, that'll get you fired pretty quick.
In the NBA, that'll get you fired pretty quick.
You want to keep him in Milwaukee, you'll do exactly what he says. When we come back, let's get back into the Royals a little bit. I want to talk about the biggest unsung hero for the first month of the Royals. We'll do that next.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.